I call the meeting of the Wednesday, April 15th, 2026 House Veterans and Military Affairs Division to order. A quorum is present. We begin our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States. Representative Olson, would you like to lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin our agenda, I want to remind everybody that the committee chair maintains control of this hearing, and I have the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts and shouting or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak with our sergeant staff identified by the gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are here to ensure everybody's safety. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room. Fail to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing. Representative Ray Rauer, have you had a chance to review the minutes? Representative Ray Rauer moves the approval of the March 25th, 2026 meetings. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion carries and the minutes of the March 25th, 2026 meetings are approved. The first bill on our agenda is House File 4588. Representative Myers, you're at the table with your testifiers. And I move that House File 4588 before the division. Representative Myers, please begin your testimony if your testifiers state their name before they begin.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Appreciate it. This is my first time in committee, so I did bring a few snacks, so there should be some for everybody, even staff. So House File 4588 is legislation establishing a task force to improve access to mental health services for veterans living in rural Minnesota. So supporting veterans and their families is something that's important to me. My father is a retired major in the Army, so his service has kind of shaped the work that I've done, both growing up as well as, my public service here as a state rep. And what we can do to support them as well as our families is all about bringing options and opportunities to the table. This bill is one way to continue that support for those families. So Minnesota has a strong tradition of supporting veterans, but we continue to hear from veterans and their families, especially in rural communities, that accessing mental health services can still be difficult. Distance, provider shortage, transportation barriers, coordination gaps, which I think you'll hear about, between local, state, federal, and our nonprofit systems are creating some real challenges. So this bill is taking a practical, collaborative approach to directing the commissioner to convene a task force focused on identifying those barriers and then recommending solutions. And I will move to one of my testifiers here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bryce Wood. I am a third year doctoral student in clinical psychology at Augsburg University and also an 8-year veteran of the United States Air Force. First, I want to thank Representative Myers for bringing this bill forward, and I'm here today in support of HF 4588. I want to talk about why this bill matters both as a veteran and as someone training to be a clinical psychologist. So in my conversations with fellow veterans at the VA, one common frustration I hear is about the distance. Veterans who live in greater Minnesota often describe having to drive all the way to Minneapolis to receive their care. And that's not just a minor inconvenience. A 3 to 4 hour drive for a veteran who's managing PTSD, substance use disorder, or depression is often the difference between getting care and not getting care. The delay becomes a reason to disengage entirely from treatment. And this isn't just anecdotal, so the research is pretty consistent. Rural veterans are 70% less likely to receive any mental health treatment compared to those in urban areas. Rural VA users are more likely to die by suicide than those in their urban counterparts. And recent research has just established a direct relationship between staffing levels at the VA and treatment initiation. with the facilities that are most understaffed being the most impacted, and rural facilities are disproportionately in that category. So this is not a hypothetical problem. It's already something that's happening, and it does have real consequences. Minnesota has nearly 296,000 veterans, and Minnesota has more rural veterans than urban veterans. So those 7.4% of the adult population in non-metro areas are veterans, compared to 5.4% in metro areas. These are the communities that sent the most people to help or to serve, and are yet the communities least equipped to support them. From my clinical training, I have seen what happens when care is delayed. In my current treatment at, in a substance use clinic, delays in accessing mental health care are not neutral, they have consequences. I have seen veterans disengage from treatment, leading to relapse or consequences. And these happen during gaps in care that should never have happened. When someone finally reaches out for help and the system cannot respond in time, the cost is not just clinical, it's permanent. A state-level task force will not solve every problem, but it creates a coordinated, accountable mechanism to track what is happening to rural veterans. The veteran service organizations do incredible work, but what we lack right now is a coordinated response where we can bring in many different agencies to one table to solve issues all at once. Nearly half of rural veterans nationally are unenrolled in the VA healthcare system, despite being eligible. This is a population we can build if we build the infrastructure to reach it. As someone who served alongside them and who now works to provide care to people like them, I am asking this committee to support HF 4588. Minnesota has an obligation to ensure that rural veterans are not left behind or forgotten. I would welcome the opportunity to continue working as this bill moves forward. Thank you for your time and for the opportunity to provide testimony today.
Thank you. To the next testifier, please state your name and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Brendan Weed. I'm a doctor of psychology student at Augsburg University, classmate of Bryce. I live in Carver County, and approximately in 2013 or 2023, approximately 5% of our citizens were veterans. We have one office in Shakopee, and then there is a small Carver County facility, an in-person place that veterans can walk into and receive basic mental health services, except that facility has a 28-day waiting period. And while that service, those services offer therapy for patients with schizophrenia, for patients with depression, and for PTSD, 28 days is a long waiting period, especially for clients that have existing schizophrenia, that have existing personality disorders, and experience hallucinations and flashbacks. As someone who works with both veterans and their children, the impacts of PTSD and of personality disorders among the population is tremendous. And we know from some of the clinical psychology research that trauma from veterans also affects families, and it affects their children as well. So I ask for full support of the Rural Veterans Mental Health Bill, and especially to develop this task force in order to access and just develop additional information so that veterans can receive the necessary services and so families can receive the support that they need as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the testifier list is Mr. Kelly. Go ahead and begin.
Good afternoon, Chair, or morning, Chair and members. For the record, my name is John Kelly. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The department has had some initial conversations with Representative Myers relating to this bill. We'd like to continue those conversations. We believe that while veterans' mental health, in, whether it's in the metro or in greater Minnesota, is a very important issue, we'd like to understand which gaps this task force would be exploring and what they'd like to see here before we can support a full commissioner's task force. We believe that there are a number of options for veterans in greater Minnesota relating to mental health treatment, and we'd like to continue that conversation before we can support a task force. I'd also note that The Veterans Suicide Prevention Collaborative is also has the potential to nest a mental health committee in underneath it, and that's already been funded by this committee. So I will look forward to continuing these conversations as this bill moves forward with Representative Myers and his testifiers. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any member questions for the testifiers or the author? Representative Duran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelly, obviously this is something that is a huge concern of mine, obviously living in Bemidji, being a little bit farther from the cities. I see this all the time, especially with my friends and everything out there. What have we learned? I mean, this has been going on for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And I guess, what have we learned and why haven't we adapted to our situation now? Because we are struggling to get mental health services in our rural communities right now. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, what are we struggling? What are the barriers that get us the resources right now? Do we know those, and would this task force help us with that?
Mr. Kelly.
Chair, Representative Duran. So just to paint the picture a little bit for the members on what infrastructure is currently available in Minnesota for mental health treatment. So the main mental health, the main VA systems that serve the state of Minnesota and its veterans is Fargo-Moorhead area VA, Minneapolis VA, and the Twin Ports system. They all offer telehealth for mental health services. And I understand that connectivity is an issue still in greater Minnesota, but that is an option. In addition to that, there are community-based outpatient clinics for both in-person and telehealth in Albert Lea, Ely, Hibbing, and St. James. And then additionally, this committee and the legislature has funded to the department funding for the CORE program with Lutheran Social Services. That's counseling and case management, outreach and referral and education program. This has locations in Alexandria, Brainerd, Detroit Lakes, Fergus Falls, Moorhead, and St. Cloud, and they also offer telehealth. So there is a wide, not only VA, but through the state-funded CORE program that the MDVA manages that funding to LSS, they have those supports and mental health, including intensive in-home treatment for PTSD is available through Lutheran Social Services. And in addition to that, there are vet centers, which are separate but connected to the VA. They have satellite locations in Mankato, Rochester. They have a mobile vet center, and they have a St. Cloud outstation. And my understanding is that Representative Finstad is pushing hard for a Mankato vet center. So I'm not saying it's perfect by any means, but it is. There are a lot of options for veterans to receive treatment for mental health, whether it is in person or via telehealth. And what we want to understand in continuing this conversation with Representative Myers on this bill is, given that ecosystem that currently exists that's funded through either the federal government through the VA or through the state legislature through the CORE program, where those gaps are. And then I think if we need to come back and do a task force, figuring out who's on that task force and how it would operate is something that we'd be interested in, but we need a little bit more time to talk this through with Representative Myers.
Representative Duran, any follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll give you a real-life experience. When I was working with the Bemidji Police Department, I worked nights, so I got off at 6 a.m., and my buddy was struggling through the whole night. So as soon as I got off shift, the resources were still there, but I got off shift and I drove him 3 hours to Fargo because there was no, area to help him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to me, I'm still trying to figure out, we've been going through this for a long time and we haven't really established a good, fix to what our struggles are, especially in northern Minnesota. So I guess would this task force be beneficial to us to understand some of that? I'm just trying to figure out why we're still struggling with this stuff. And I guess I'll just leave it as that. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing forward a good concept, a good idea. Thank you for the testifiers for what they've been saying. I really appreciated hearing the fact that he said, Members from the military derive mostly from rural areas, so that is a fact. 60% of the United States military comes from 19% of the population of the country. So 60% of the service members of our country come from rural areas of our nation, and I don't know why that is. Maybe we're trying to get out, or maybe there's something in us, or maybe it's in the water. I'm not sure. But us rural members, we serve at a rate that far exceeds those of other areas. So I appreciate you bringing that concept and understanding that that is a reality. When Mr. Kelly said that we've plussed up our suicide prevention program with the VA, and I think that this is an easy way for us to kind of embed, and I think that the testifiers, if you were to kind of connect with Mr. Kelly on this, I don't think we would need any legislation to get that ball rolling. And so what I really tend to dislike task forces and places where people sit and talk and they actually don't walk. And so I think that if we really want to get a move on things, we absolutely can embed your concept into what we've already plussed up last year and get the ball rolling today and not wait for this thing to go through the system and then create a task force and then get people to sit down and have these conversations. We can walk the walk today, and I would encourage you to move forward with that as well, because we can do some real great work, and I think you are absolutely on point when we're talking about rural mental health for veterans. It's necessary. It's needed. 60% of the military is from 19% of the population, so maybe we should have 60% of the mental health care in 19% of the population. I'm not sure, but we got to do something. So I really, really appreciate you bringing this forward. Thank you.
And does anybody at the testifier table want to respond?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree that we can take steps now. I think what would be helpful is having a mandated way for this coordination to happen, because often when it's not, this falls through the cracks. I mean, we've seen it over and over again with rural mental health, especially for veterans. Like Veteran Affairs and does incredible work, and they've gone so far from where they are, and yet gaps still remain that need to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Representative Clardy.
Thanks for bringing the bill forward. Would you consider including some more demographics, or having demographics show up? Because I'm really interested in who the rural people are. Are they women? Are they older people? Are they people of color? So is that something that you might consider adding as part of the task force duties?
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I mean, I think the purpose of the task force as written is to be all-encompassing of everybody, including, you know, the people who have served and their families and what the impacts are. So, yes.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Kelly, is there like a database that talks or that kind of has information on some of these disparities in terms of rural services that we have right now?
Mr. Kelly.
Chair, Representative, a lot of the data relating to veterans population, treatment, all that is housed with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. We can request data from the U.S. We have to put in basically a data request to them. That being said, we have data from Lutheran Social Services on what they're doing under that grant from the legislature. So there's some, but I don't know that we have an all-encompassing database, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I think that's where, I'd like to see kind of the conversation around this task force go, is for us to pull that data to really see the landscape of the disparity of the wait times, of the accessibility, of the miles driven, of all these different data points, and then we can set the needle of, okay, this is where we're at, and this is where we need to go to be able to make sure that we are moving the needle in terms of serving our rural veterans, especially when it comes to mental health services. So I think that's where, my recommendation would be in terms of trying to move ahead with some of the conversation around the purpose of a task force. Thank you.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. And just from being on the education committees, I know this is not a the shortage of mental health professionals is not just a veterans issue. It's all issues. We have that for children too, and for everybody. It's just a fact of life. So we need to figure out how to continue to increase availability. My question is for veterans' mental health, does it have to be a veterans-only mental health provider? Can a veteran go see a regular mental health provider and still get reimbursed? That's one of my questions.
Mr. Kelly.
Chair, Representative Bennett, so the VA has community health care. You know, I don't want to speak to laying out the full process. You know, my base understanding is that if there is not options in VA system, that there are opportunities to go out into the community for not only for mental health but for physical health. I also note, like I laid out, there are non-VA supports now. So the legislature has funded the CORE program that is based out of the department that provides mental health counseling that are not VA staff through Lutheran Social Services. So yes, veterans are people. So veterans have private health insurance. They also can get their health care from the VA. So they absolutely, yes, they could go and get treatment if they wanted to pay out of pocket. I don't know why they would do so other than maybe there's an opportunity there for them that's not there with the VA, but they have community care. I would also note we have, through the additional support from the legislature for veterans suicide prevention, we are standing up and Ms. Johnson testified to it a few hearings ago, this community health navigator program where we are going to be having and based in rural Minnesota in private healthcare systems, connecting with veterans in crisis and connecting them with services, whether they're private services or through the VA. So we also have county veteran service officers in every county. They're working and we're trying to build up that connection point with our suicide collaborative and our other services to reach veterans where they're at. I don't think it's a perfect system, but I think we are doing better than a lot of states.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Representative Bennett, follow-up?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up comment, and thank you for that. I do think the whole system, and obviously a lot of it is federally connected and you can't change it, but it needs to be re-looked at, and I hope this task force, if it's put forward, will explore innovative ideas as well. And I do know we have a system problem as well, because I know of actually one of my former students who's now in his 30s or 40s, I can't remember, opened a mental health clinic in rural Minnesota, southern Minnesota, and it took 13 months, I believe, just to get licensed. And so we have a problem in a lot of areas, and maybe the task force would help reveal such things as well. We have to be careful with fraud, obviously, and so that's an issue, but also just the length of time it takes to get these facilities going and get availability for our veterans and others. So thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Co-Chair Zong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill author, I'm just curious, you know, I appreciate the work that you're trying to do. I'm curious, you know, what the fiscal impact is of creating this task force and then for the appropriations. Where are you thinking of getting appropriations from, given that this is not a budget year?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair, for that question. I will actually defer to John here, because he's done these in the past, of what the rough cost may be. And as far as funds, you know, I've heard it from other people before. I think there's a lot of rocks you can flip over and find funds if we want to make this a priority.
Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. So I can't speak to the specificity of this cost as I stated in my initial testimony, we think that we want to continue to work with Representative Myers to flush this language out a bit. If you recall the SGU task force that we just did, it laid out the members, it laid out the process, it laid out the mission, it laid out the focus areas. The same with the suicide prevention, it laid out what the research areas were going to be. And so that's what we're talking about when we talk about continuing the conversation with Representative Myers. As it stands right now, the bill as introduced, I can't fully speak to that, but I can say that, you know, for the SGU task force that met 8 times, that we, you know, stood up, we did the Secretary of State's process, all of that, we definitely expended that $118,000 that we was appropriated for the department for that operation of that task force.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Chair Zhang?
I guess back to Representative Meyer, I'm just curious, do you have a number in mind? Because you have a bank appropriation person, I'm just curious. I know that it's a bill that's work in progress, but do you have a number in mind of what you're trying to get from in terms of funding for this?
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Zhang, for that question. I do not. Again, a lot of the stuff, we're coming up to deadlines here. I'm just trying to bring an option and opportunity to the committee for your guys' consideration. In my eyes, the committee, the departments have done good work in this area, but we're always just trying to bring other options and opportunities to the table. If you guys so choose that this is one of those, you know, options or opportunities, it's something I'm open to.
All right. Seeing no further questions, I just have a couple of comments. To Representative Bennett, there is a difference between veterans' mental health and standard mental health. Sometimes it's tough to get the veteran to go to a non-veteran to get help. And that's, I think, kind of where these guys are coming from. And the core services are a good option, but sometimes it's, you know, it's not what we need. So I welcome the discussion to keep going. Representative Myers, you have closing remarks?
Yeah, I just, you know, brought this forward to create a structured process to bring stakeholders, experts, veteran advocates together so that the legislature can, you know, act on informed recommendations moving forward. I think it's an important step. We talked about those options and opportunities to support, you know, every Minnesota veteran, no matter where they live, and to have that access to mental health support is something that is owed and that they've earned. So I would hope you guys would consider this. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further questions and the closing remarks done, House File 4588 is laid over. The next bill on our agenda is House File 3685. Vice Chair Olson, please come to the testifier table. Vice Chair Olson moves that House File 3685 before the division, and I see you have an amendment coded DE1 that replaces the House language with the Senate version of the bill.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
I will move the DE1. Any questions or discussion on the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and the DE1 amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Olson, please begin your testimony and have your testifier state his name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3685 is a bill that would just allow former service members and veterans of both the Korean conflict and the Vietnam War to petition their school districts to obtain a diploma if they didn't receive one. So if you look back way long, long ago, there were members of our military or armed service who decided to quit school and join the military to fight for the United States. And by quitting school, they didn't actually graduate. They didn't gain their diplomas, but they went off and they served and received another form of education. And so this is just a way that we can say thank you for your service. And in many times, a lot of these individuals went back home and became very successful farming or owning a business or something that didn't require them to have a diploma, and so they never went back to school. It would be kind of ridiculous to ask someone who fought at, you know, in Vietnam and someone who is in the Chosin Reservoir in Korea to come back to finish 12th grade. So this is just a way that we can provide that. It doesn't apply to anything other than those areas. The DE amendment that was just adopted gives you really tight limitations. It's not, you know, there was a time, I think it was 2022, when we were seeing some significantly reduced recruitment in the United States military, where the Army actually said, for a 1 week period of time, they said, we'll take people who don't have GEDs or diplomas. For 1 week, they said, if you've got a high enough ASVAB score, which means you can read and write and do math and that kind of stuff anyways, they would have taken you. But that only was for 1 week. That doesn't apply to these individuals. So the people who joined for 1 week period of time in 2022 can't ask for a diploma from Minnesota. But these are for Vietnam and for Korea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kelly, state your name and begin your guess.
Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for MDVA. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify on House File 3685, and thank you to Representative Olson for bringing this bill forward. This bill clarifies in state law what we understand to be a standard practice for school districts across the state, providing at-request high school diplomas for veterans who left school before graduating and serving in the military. We appreciate the collaborative approach that Representative Olson took in drafting this bill. The amendment reflects input from MDVA as well as MDE, and we are good with this bill. Under this process, in House File 3685, school districts will provide a diploma to Minnesota Korean War era and Vietnam era veterans. This process allows for recognition of those who put their education on hold and answered their country's call. If passed, Minnesota would join numerous states, other states who have enacted similar policies and programs. My grandfather, a proud World War II veteran, received his high school diploma in the 1990s under New York's version of this program. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs stands ready to assist school district staff as needed in verifying discharge paperwork. Thank you for your time today, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers or the author? Representative Clardy.
Thanks for the bill. Just a question. So is this done by request of the person or the family member? Okay. Back to the data. Is there a database as well, or is it just solely on request?
I'm sorry, Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is going to be based off of a request from either the family, because it can be posthumously awarded to an individual, or it's based off of their request to the school district.
Representative Clardy.
Good bill. Thank you.
Any further questions? Co-Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, for bringing this bill forward. I'm just curious, why just these two conflicts, and what about future conflicts? Have you taken into consideration other conflicts?
Vice Chair Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Personally, I'm open to say, you know, there are ways that you can obtain an associate's degree through some of your service with the military based off of what your education afterwards. So for those who don't know, individuals go to basic training, but then they go to their AIT, which is their initial training for the job that they're going to do. And so if you're an infantryman, you learn how to dig holes and shoot guns and that kind of stuff. But if you're signal, you're learning computers, you're learning all sorts of different communications aspects, you're working radios and all sorts of great things. Not saying that, you know, our infantrymen who walk around with guns all day aren't a bad thing, but there are ways that you can get an alternate education, and so you can actually apply your military training to universities who will provide you with an associate's degree for the training that you were awarded. So I'm absolutely open to the concept of saying any person who has served X amount of years in the military and has achieved this level of an ASVAB score, proving that they can read and write, deserve a GED or a diploma. I'm good with that. This is one step. And a lot of the individuals, if you're looking at it, modern military, most people have a GED or a diploma. I actually was told, I don't know, I didn't verify it, but someone told me that a GED was created for the purpose of soldiers obtaining something like this after they get back from war. So I think that this is a great way of working it, and I'm happy to move forward with that too.
And Co-Chair Zhang.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the Senate language on line 1.17. It includes public and non-public schools, so I'm just curious, in your DE amendment on line 1.4, it says school district or charter school. Does that, the school district, I don't sit on the education committee, so maybe Representative Bennett can answer this too, but does that also include non-public schools too, Mr. Vice Chair?
Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, if Representative Bennett has the answer to that, I would say that there probably weren't very many charter schools during the Korean conflict, so they're probably not going back to their old charter school that they were a part of. But there were, in fact, private schools that an individual could have been a part of, and that would have been the most recent education that they received was from that private school, and I think it would be inappropriate to ask them to go to a school that never had them in class, saying, hey, by law, I'm not allowed to get my diploma from this private school. I have to go to the public school, and then there'd be some weird transfers for a 90-year-old individual. I think that would potentially be inappropriate. But if Chair Bennett has an answer to that question as well.
Chair Bennett.
Thank goodness for Google, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that's what it's. Charter school started in Minnesota in 1991. So.
There you go.
No, my question wasn't entirely. Was, I wanted to know if a school district, if that would include like the private schools.
Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I believe I provided a fairly decent explanation. If you need more,
You're saying yes, it does include the private schools.
Yeah, okay. It would.
Well, that's all. I just want to make sure that was also included in there because in the Senate language it says non-public schools, so that would say private. But in your House language, it's just a school district. So I don't know if the school district encompasses the private schools too. That's what I want clarity on.
We saw a hand raised from Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair and Chair. So we worked on this language with the Minnesota Department of Education, and the way this bill is designed, we wanted to make sure that a lot of these veterans, especially the Korean conflict veterans, their school might not exist. It may have been consolidated into a central school district. So we basically wanted to have it where they live and where they've made their life. My grandfather lived in Long Island, New York, and he got his high school diploma from DeWitt Clinton in Manhattan. But that's where he went. But if it didn't exist anymore, he could have gone down the street under this bill and gotten a high school diploma there. So if someone, you know, made their life somewhere else in Minnesota and want, they can go down to their local school district and they can get it. If they want to go to the private school, they can get it. That's how we tried to make this as low drag for the veteran as possible.
Representative Ray Brower.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great bill. Thank you for bringing it forward. Just looking at the details of the language, my question would be, it says unable to complete their high school educations for reasons related or unrelated to military service. I'm just curious why you chose to include unrelated and what circumstance that might be.
Vice Chair Olson.
That's a really good question, Mr. Chair. This is the Senate version, so I would give it to Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. So when you look at these two conflicts, they existed before the volunteer army or military. And so if you left school, you would get potentially drafted during that time period. And so they could have left school because of a family situation, and then they could have gotten drafted and served in Korea or Vietnam. And so we didn't want it to be not everybody that served during that time was going voluntarily.
Seeing no further questions, just a real quick comment. The generation that we're talking about is disappearing quickly, so we need to move on this. And also just a comment on that generation. I knew a career in war veteran. Not only did he quit school to join the Army, he lied his age to get in. So that's the difference in the generations, and it's just incredible. So I appreciate the bill. Thank you. And your final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the committee for hearing the bill. I think it's a pretty great way. It's obviously a pretty small thing, but to a lot of people, this could mean a lot. I mean, an education means a lot to people, and living your entire life without this piece of paper that says that the government determines that you have an education, I think that's something that's pretty special.
On our agenda is House File 4577. Please come to the table with your testifiers. I will move House File 4577 before the division. You also have a delete all amendment, coded DE3. I will move the amendment before the division. Representative Reimer, is the testimony on this bill to the language in the DE3?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is.
Members, I'd like the division to adopt the DE3 amendment, then move to testimony on the bill as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries and the DE3 amendment is adopted. Representative Reimer, please begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Zhang, members of the committee, thank you for taking the time to hear House File 4577 today. This establishes a psilocybin therapeutic program for our state. Specifically, the reason it's in veterans right now is because qualifying health issues are a thing that a lot of our veterans deal with. Things like PTSD, depression, substance use disorder are all qualifying health issues in this. When we talk about psilocybin therapy, we're not talking about the psilocybin that Chair Bliss may have tried in college one time, right? This is... This is controlled, this is professional, and this program basically establishes a framework for our state to apply this important therapeutic to veterans who might be suffering from these specific ailments. And you'll have testimony today that talks a little bit about the science and how it's evolving. My heart, and I think Representative Smith's heart in this bill, is to create a different pathway for treatment for people who are suffering from some of these ailments. And you find that specifically in our veterans community after they get back from deployment and things of that nature. And I think over time we see kind of a repetitive cycle of traditional medicine maybe leading to addiction. And the whole goal of this bill is to create an off-ramp, to create another potential therapeutic that can be in use that people will give testimony today. And there are numerous articles out there talking about how this has saved lives. So excited to co-present today with Representative Smith. There's been a lot of conversations back and forth to get this bill in the shape that it is in right now, and welcome any questions. So thank you.
All right. Do you have Representative Smith? Did you?
Yeah, if I could say some words. Thank you, Chair Bliss. It's great to be here this morning in my normal place to the right of Representative Reimer. No one in this room would doubt that mental illness is one of the defining issues in our society today. There's various stats out there, but somewhere 1 in 5 U.S. adults experience mental illness each year. And the horrors of mental illness are not just the experience itself, but of course the trickle-down effects in all areas of life. People with depression have 40% higher risk of developing cardiac disease, hypertension, stroke, diabetes, obesity, and a wide variety of other things. 34.5% of U.S. adults with mental illness also have substance use disorder. And as members of this committee know, this is even more pressing for veterans, especially when we talk about treatment-resistant PTSD. It affects approximately 7 to 20% of veterans, depending on their service era, with higher rates up to 29% in those from Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, which it's very personal to me. That's when I grew up, and a lot of classmates and friends went to serve our country at that time. Depression affects an estimated 13 to 16% of veterans. Today we're talking about therapeutic psilocybin programs here in Minnesota. It's a new tool in our toolbox to help veterans and Minnesotans in areas that previously they felt like there was no help. And treatment they had been given was not working. You'll hear amazing stories today. If you look at all in the media, you will see incredible stories. People will use terms like, I thought my life was over, or I was not functional, or I wasn't able to be even hold a job. And then all of a sudden, from responsible use of this drug, able to have a new life. They use that term quite often. So we're excited to propose this to you. If you have questions about the science of it, I would highly, highly recommend looking at the report that the Psychedelic Medicine Task Force put out in 2025. It is extremely helpful, chock full of studies that are really incredible work. There's a large amount of work to put that together. And it's for your use as we're making decisions like we are in this committee today. So thank you all so much, and happy to answer questions.
All right, we have some testifiers on the list. Jamie Coyle. And then next up is Dr. Jessica Nielsen. And please state your name and then begin your testimony. Thank you.
Jamie Coyle. Chair, members, I am here today in support of the Psychedelic Access Project. It is a Minnesota-based advocacy organization working to advance safe and equitable and fact-based evaluation and access to psychedelic-assisted therapies. We focus on policy, education, and responsible implementation. My name is Jamie, as I stated. I am a co-founder and board director of the Psychedelic Access Project. I've spent years advocating for plant medicine policy in Minnesota, and I have been trained and licensed as a natural medicine facilitator in the state of Colorado. We strongly support the intent of this bill. It creates a structured, supervised, and clinically grounded pathway for psilocybin therapy for individuals with conditions such as PTSD, depression, and substance use disorders. For this committee, that is especially relevant for veterans. Thousands of Minnesota veterans are living with PTSD, and many are not finding relief through existing treatments. This program offers a new tool that could be life-changing. We appreciate the bill's focus on safety, including medical screening, licensed facilitators, and controlled administration sessions. At the same time, we want to highlight a concern around the timeline and access. As written, the program may take up to 2 years to stand up, followed by a three-year pilot with final recommendations due in 2031. In practice, that means if the program fills up quickly, the earliest patient could access this treatment, the access to this treatment could be as late as July of 2032. For veterans and others who are struggling today, that timeline is just not long. It can be the difference between continued suffering and access to care, or even life or death. For veterans and others who are struggling today, we encourage the inclusion of interim reporting to the legislator and flexibility to expand access if early data shows strong outcomes. This allows the state to remain cautious while also being responsive. It's a strong bill. With small adjustments to timeline and scalability, Minnesota can better serve veterans and others in need. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Dr. Jessica Nielsen. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Dr. Jessica Nielsen. Chair Bliss and esteemed members of the House Veterans and Military Affairs Committee, my name is Dr. Jessica Nielsen. As I said, I'm testifying in support of HF 4577 to create a psilocybin therapy pilot program here in Minnesota based on one of the recommendations of the legislatively created Psychedelic Medicine Task Force. I was appointed by the governor in 2023 and elected to serve as the chair of the Psychedelic Medicine Task Force based on my extensive experience doing psychedelic clinical research here in Minnesota, where I conducted the first FDA and DEA-approved psilocybin clinical trial in the state. The task force submitted our 200-page legislative report last year with recommendations that included creating a therapeutic access program with psilocybin mushrooms. The report thoroughly evaluated their long history of use by indigenous cultures worldwide. Scientific evidence for their safe and effective therapeutic uses across a broad range of difficult-to-treat mental health conditions, the expansion of access in other states and countries who have legalized regulated access models to fill the gap in currently available treatment options, and policy considerations for implementation for our recommendations. People are not well. Currently available therapies don't work for everyone, and options that are available can be prohibitive depending on levels of access, insurance coverage, and availability of adequately trained therapists. Clinicians are frustrated about the limited tools at their disposal to help their patients heal. We need more options and tools in the toolkit. I personally know 6 people who have taken their own life over the past year, 2 of whom were veterans. I can't help but wonder if their lives could have been saved if there were more effective options for them to access, especially when a viable alternative with psilocybin mushrooms is widely available, yet currently illegal to access. Both the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Defense, the Department of War, are investing millions into helping provide access to treat the mental health fallout of combat for veterans and active duty military, recognizing that those who serve our country have bared the cost with their physical and mental health and deserve access to as many options that we can provide. The task force report thoroughly reviewed the scientific research with psilocybin and other psychedelic medicines up to the end of 2024, with more promising research and therapeutic indications being published since then. The interest in psilocybin therapy has been increasing since their prohibition in 1970, not just from those hoping to experience their healing potential, but also from the scientific and medical communities that see this as an effective alternative to the currently available treatment options that aren't effective for large numbers of people. Current indications suggest treatment-resistant depression, end-of-life distress, substance use disorders including alcohol abuse and tobacco, and that these are better treated with psilocybin than their currently available treatments, and promising findings from ongoing studies on dozens of other health conditions, including post-traumatic stress disorder, specifically in veterans, are coming out every day. While the clinical trials with psilocybin are showing extraordinary promise and outperforming currently available treatment options on the path towards FDA approval, we cannot wait for an FDA-approved pharmaceutical version of a treatment that readily exists in nature, has been widely used safely for thousands of years worldwide by indigenous cultures, and is already widely used out in the community, including other states like Oregon, Colorado, and New Mexico, who have legalized therapeutic access to psilocybin mushrooms, with 38 other states having some type of legislation introduced to expand access to these types of therapies. I encourage you to support HF 4577. Thank you for your time and consideration of this important piece of legislation to help ease the suffering of patients and veterans in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Ross Brecky. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Please state the proper pronunciation and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Ross Brecky. I'm just here to tell you that I'm not a veteran. I'm here to support one of my childhood friends who is a veteran. Me and Chris were the naughty kids in school, and in the late 90s, he joined the Marines, and he was in that for a long time. And in the early 2000s, I ran into him on the top of a mountain in California right after he'd finished his deployment and was being released. And from then on, we continued to connect with each other and chat over the years. And both of us struggled deeply with depression and alcohol and tobacco and just mental health issues. Chris continues to struggle. And we talk a lot about what happened to me in early 21 when I experienced my first psilocybin therapy. On July 6th of this year, I will celebrate 5 years free of alcohol and tobacco. And my depression symptoms are like 90% gone. I mean, I gotta have a little with this world, right? There's healing to be found in this medicine. This is not something new. This is something that humans used to have access to for thousands of years. Psilocybin has evolved in mushrooms more than once in totally different species on this planet. It's here to help us. I believe that if we can pass these laws and make the changes, we can bring healing to more of our veterans who need the healing. Every 37 seconds, we lose another one. That's a devastating, devastating thought. Think of all the families and children that have had to deal with the loss of their family members. So I'm here today to ask you to please consider passing this bill for all of humanity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And final testifier is Mr. Kelly. Please state your name, begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'll be brief. For the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. While MDVA takes no position on this bill, I want to note for the record that psilocybin is classified as a Schedule I controlled substance under U.S. federal law and cannot be used in our state veterans' homes. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or member discussion? Okay, Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for beginning the conversation on what I hope to be a really long and arduously researched conversation before enactment by the state of Minnesota. You know, about 25 years ago, Minnesota service members and veterans were told that there was a wonder drug. They called it a prescription wonder drug. They said it had a really low addiction potential. They said because of its 12-hour slow release, it was going to be, you had less than a 1% chance of being addicted to this drug, right? They said that because of that slow release, there was less potential for abuse, and it would provide you with 12 hours of relief. And they pushed it, and they pushed it, and they pushed it. And that was OxyContin. And members, I know countless service members and veterans who at one point in time struggled with the addiction of that drug. I spent an entire summer after college with my cousin as he was trying to break his addiction because the VA finally cut him off and said, enough's enough, you can't have this, so he couldn't find it anymore. And we spent the entire summer in his basement playing video games because that was all he could manage to do as he was breaking his addiction to this prescription wonder drug that was FDA approved, was not a Schedule I drug, and had been researched thoroughly. And we heard here today comments of great potential. It has the potential to benefit. It has this, it has that. And we're seeing that there's only two states in the entire country, Oregon and Colorado, that allow this type of a drug to be utilized widely. And I think that as a state, we owe it to our service members, we owe it to our veterans to ensure that we are not allowing another wonder prescription drug to come out onto our markets without a thorough vetting of this. I'm not standing here telling you today that I'm against this concept. I'm not saying that that the doctors are wrong. What I'm saying is that I need more than just a potential for benefit before I'm going to ever move off of the stand that says we cannot open this door. So I know that there's a lot of great research going on. We had someone here today who told me that that they were working on research and they saw potential benefits. That's great. Once we know for sure that this is a good thing, that this is not the next wonder drug that will addict an entire generation of service members, then I'll be on board with it. But before then, I will always be a no on it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Reimer.
Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know anything about this, so I'm learning a lot. And, you know, I think that this is a very thoughtful, methodical approach to trying to introduce a new treatment to patients in Minnesota. Change can be scary and hard, and I think in this place it's very difficult to make decisions where we're, like, not absolutely sure that we know exactly what's going to happen as a result. But in medicine, like, we don't always know how every drug and therapy will impact every single person, and we can't. I was just thinking, the reason I raised my hand to talk is I was just thinking about the Alzheimer's medication that the FDA just approved, where we're really unclear if that's going to have a positive impact on patients, but they decided that they were willing to do it. So, you know, sometimes we have to trust the experts, and in this case, the Department of Health, to develop really thoughtful, clear criteria for when we can use this treatment. So I think that I'm comfortable with the fact that I don't know exactly how this will work for every single person before we take this approach, because clearly a lot of thought and time has gone into this. And so I support your bill. Thank you.
Representative Reimer,
Mr. Chair, if I can, and Representative Feist, thanks for the comments, along with Representative Olson as well. You know, it harkens back to, for me, just a few years ago under a Republican administration when we talked a lot in this legislature and throughout the country about right to try, right? So we're not cutting corners, but we're using experimental drugs and experimental treatments in order to save your life from an ailment, right? So the hope for this bill and the reason that the time horizon is a little bit longer is so that we can establish a program that gives veterans and other people suffering from PTSD and these mental conditions leading to suicide and other issues the right to try another therapeutic. When you talk about oxytocin was synthesized and commercialized in the 1960s. And I think the broader conversation we're having right now is that just because it is FDA approved, right, just because it is a drug, you know, as we traditionally think about it, doesn't mean it's always the right solution, right? I think even beyond oxytocin now we're getting into a pretty severe opioid problem with our veteran community. And what this bill does is it, again, creates another off-ramp, another tool in our tool belt for the right to try another therapeutic that may work for a number of our veterans. You know, I think you heard a powerful testimony about someone's firsthand experience on how this changed their lives. I think that's worth paying attention to. I think the time horizon is reasonable. And that's what I can say about that. Thanks.
Representative Raybrower.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You kind of just said a lot of the things I was thinking about saying, so I'm just going to take a minute to thank the testifiers for coming today. Really appreciated hearing your information, your stories. It's great to hear directly from folks who it worked for and directly from therapists who are doing that, you know, want to be able to do this work and help their clients. I myself have watched a number of documentaries on the research going on and seen, you know, that there is effectiveness happening. And as far as we go to the OxyContin, it was very much a, you know, a big pharma advertising the glorious, you know, things about this medication. And honestly, knowing that people were probably going to get hooked on it and not caring. So I feel like we're coming at this from a very different perspective of the groundwork of what is working for folks. And so I am excited to continue to hear more and learn more about the research and just thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative, whatever. Mr. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to ask, I think we have Kelly from Office of Cannabis Management to come up and just speak about this bill and potential costs and implementation of it, if possible.
Sure. Come to the table and give your name and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair members. My name is Kelly Wilder, and I serve as the Government Relations Director for the Office of Cannabis Management. The office has appreciated engagement from the bill's advocates and from Representative Smith over the past few weeks. These are novel programs and remain rare nationwide, as some of you have mentioned. And OCM currently does not possess expertise in the therapeutic use of psilocybin. So should the bill move forward, we would appreciate the opportunity to continue to provide input on major structural components for the program, as well as input to ensure adequate timeline and resourcing. We were asked to work on a fiscal note for the original version of the bill. We have not had a request for the DE, and that fiscal note is not yet complete and released from the LBO, so I actually can't speak to specifics of the fiscal note today. I will say that it was robust, just considering the fact that, as I said, we do not currently have expertise in this area. So thank you, Chair and members. We look forward to continuing the conversation.
All right. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Reimer, for bringing this forward. I find it very interesting, and I do support it, and I want to expand upon Representative Olson's comments, because I think he made some good ones. But what I took out of that, Representative Olson, is that just because the FDA approves something doesn't mean it's safe. And just because something's natural doesn't mean it's safe. We have to walk forward carefully either way. I do believe these natural substances, they're part of nature and not created, do not have a fair playing field in the medical realm because they're not moneymakers. And as Representative Ray Rauer kind of mentioned, it's something that we should explore carefully. And so I think this is good. I'm a little concerned with the timeline that some of your testifiers spoke about, because we want, you know, veterans to be able to have that option. I think informed consent is hugely important, whether it's FDA approved or natural. And so transparency and, you know, these are the known side effects. These are the known, whether it's addictive or not addictive and so on. Super important. But I think this is a good bill that needs to walk forward carefully. But I would encourage that we don't put so many constraints upon it that it makes it almost impossible for a veteran to, with that knowledge, be able to take part in a study, because that's basically what this is. I do have one question about the veteran's home comment that was made, where a veteran at a veteran's home would not be able to utilize this substance. With the treatment, is it only given in a clinical place? I'm not sure the proper term is here. Or is it something you give that person the drug and they take it in their own home or and so on? I'm not sure if I'm asking that
question. Representative Reimer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett. By the way, just the timeline on this, you know, I never thought that I would be more conservative on this than Representative Bennett. We got a rebel over there. But no, so as part of this bill, there is approved medical facilities, and I'll let Representative Smith maybe fill in the details a little bit here, but it is also not self-administered. So my understanding, in a number of veteran circumstances, just because they don't take a specific drug in the veteran's home, my understanding is that there can be referrals out, and these would be approved medical facilities.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kelly would like to come up and make a comment.
Yeah.
Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Representative. So our residents in our state veterans' homes, they are not going out to get this treatment. They are treated in the veterans home. We are funded 45% of our budget by the federal VA. federal VA does not provide this treatment, and so we are not able to provide this treatment. We communicated this to Representative Smith and his staff in the interim. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Smith?
Yeah, I can answer that question as well, and that's exactly correct. Unfortunately, we are unable to change federal law to make that possible. I would love to and have talked to some of our federal representatives about that, and there are some that are working on that. To the question, and I think this gets to Representative Olson, some questions as well, and I was going to say this in my closing remarks, but what also brought me to this was things like OxyContin and things that are addictive that are currently used to treat these, as well as SSRIs, which can also have very negative side effects, which is primarily what we have for treatment on depression, PTSD, several other things. Those are taken continually, usually daily, sometimes several times a day. And because of that, they are both, unfortunately, profitable for large insurance companies, which is why they are pushing these products. But secondarily, the individual has it in their possession. And so that's where you lead to understandable substance abuse for especially folks who are struggling with very intense abilities. Mental health disabilities. This is a very different drug. So the science is very clear that psilocybin is not addictive, first of all, and second of all, it would only be something that someone took once or twice a year total. This program specifically is arranged to have the maximum amount of benefit while also not allowing any sort of abuse of the drug itself. So the way someone would take this drug, a veteran in this case, their mental health provider or physician or some licensed medical professional, and that could be someone that is in a veteran's home, could say, this is a possible treatment for you that is available to you in this state where you live. It wouldn't be covered, to be clear, by the VA, but it's something where they could recommend someone for this program. The commissioner could approve that, but there would have to be a health screener that individual would have to go to make sure there's nothing in their past that would potentially, in their medical past, that could potentially be complicated by psilocybin use. Then they would go to a licensed facility that are licensed through the Office of Cannabis Management, and the bill as it currently is, and they would have three sessions. The first would be an informative session. To get informed consent, to be very clear about what they are taking, what the experience would be like, what the hope is going to be in the whole space of the program. Then they would leave. Then they would come back to that place again, the licensed facility, and they would have an administrative session. That's when they would actually take the drug and have the experience that normally lasts several hours in the presence every single moment of a licensed provider. And there are currently programs to license those caregivers in states, Oregon and Colorado specifically, that we could use those programs to license those individuals to make sure not only that those patients are safe, but they are also being coached through that very unique experience. And then when it was judged that it was safe for them to go, they would leave. Then they would come back for a third session called an integrated session, which is to talk through that experience and make sure that it's integrated in their overall life and healing process. And then that individual would have a year in this program where if they felt that was a good experience, they could come back. Again, if all of those professionals, licensed professionals, think that that would be a helpful process. So I think it's helpful to kind of go through how an individual would actually go through that to help with these specific questions. They're a great question. So hopefully that was clarifying.
Any further questions? None? I do have some comments. I believe I co-signed on this bill. The studies I've read shows great promise. Co-chair Olson's remarks on Oxy, yeah, it was pushed out bad. It was prescribed bad. It is a wonderful drug when used properly. I recently had three joints replaced. I don't think I could have made it through without that. Mm. So, and again, I'm very careful when I take that drug and try to sometimes pull myself off a little too soon. And trust me, that's not a favorable experience. I do have a question. Why psilocybin and not something like ibogaine, or I'm sure there's other drugs? Is there something unique about psilocybin versus ibogaine? And the reason I bring up Ibogaine. I'm sure you're all familiar with Marcus Luttrell, and if you're not, watch the movie Lone Survivor. He is an American hero, stuck behind enemy lines in Afghanistan for many, many, many days, many broken bones, shot. Very traumatic experience. Watch his entire SEAL team get killed, along with a SEAL team rescue team get killed. He went and got Ibogaine treatment, and he is a huge supporter of that. He said it changed his life. So that's this stuff does have great promise. I like the fact that we're doing it in a very controlled environment. I do have concerns about licensing the facilities. I'd like to see a licensed medical facility. I'd like to see the licensing requirements on that. I don't want to see it just a shop down on Hennepin. And forgive me if I'm using Hennepin in a derogatory way. Just when I grew up, that's what it was. And I just want to make sure that there are licensed, clean medical facilities for these people. I also want to make it clear I do not support the legalization of these products for recreational use. Under a controlled environment, I think they're very valuable. And with that, I'll leave the closing remarks to you guys.
Yeah. Do you want me to go first? Do you want to finish off?
I'll let Representative Smith make the closing remarks. But, I think, too, I'm trying to remember what I would have similar concerns, Chair Bliss, with you about the total kind of free-for-all. I think that we've actually seen problems with that, like in the cannabis part of the world, like being in commerce. I think that rollout has been a little bit clunky. But, I can't address the specific mushroom type. I don't have a lot of experience personally with those products. But I do believe in the general outlet that we're potentially creating here for our veterans. So I'll turn it over to Representative Smith here shortly. I want to thank you all for your time and your consideration on this bill, and I really do hope it's a conversation we can keep open. I also just wanted to thank you for taking the bill. I think the application of this bill is really important for veterans. I wanted this bill to start here for this reason, and I'm sure, the way the internet works, you'll start to see more stories pop up about this in your news feeds over time just because your phones are listening to this committee right now. So wanted to thank you all again for taking the time, and I'll turn it over to my my co-author.
Representative Smith.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Chairs Bliss and Jong, for hearing this bill. I'll get some of your questions, and I really appreciate your statements on this bill, Chair Bliss. First of all, for Ibogaine and other psychedelics such as LSD, MDMA, that have incredible potential and also are being studied currently to help. They are, since they are synthetic, they are created in a lab, which are currently, almost all of our labs are licensed federally. And so since it is federally Schedule I, it is very difficult to, outside of a research project, or able to get that to patients in a regular setting. And that's why we chose this. The reason that psilocybin was so attractive is because it grows naturally. It's literally mushrooms out of the ground that we can cultivate. We know how to cultivate them safely. We know how to test them, make sure that they're able to be ingested. We know how many grams of this particular psilocybin is in each mushroom. So that was really what attracted the research and specifically the task force to this being something that could get a supermajority of approval. And we can do that within Minnesota. So it also keeps us away from interstate commerce, which of course would get us into federal areas. So that's why we focused in on psilocybin. It was the best way that we could, as a state, argue to the federal government that we are doing this for our citizens within our own state. The second question as to facilities, one of the reasons that we gave OCM, who's going to be overseeing this, a lot of flexibility is learning from mistakes of the past. Oregon, when they passed their therapeutic program, had a huge list of requirements for these facilities out of a desire, as we both have, for this to be safe. But in the actual world, how that turned out is that there was no place that actually could meet all of the standards that they actually put in the law, which obviously once it's law, can't be changed. So there's some comical ones you can read about if you'd like, about like the thickness of the safe where the psilocybin would be in the evenings. And it was to such an extent that no areas could actually be open in Oregon. And we actually heard from the director of the Oregon program in our task force, and they recommended give some broad boundaries, as you said, Chair Bliss, to make sure it's safe, to make sure it's clean, make sure it's medical, these people are licensed, that everything is to top standard for the patients, but don't be so prescriptive that, you know, at the end of the day, after we do all this work, as Representative Bennett said, no one can access it because, you know, it's only in maybe one facility that's in Rochester because there's Mayo Clinic, or, you know, it's up in Duluth, and so people don't have access to it. So that's why we gave kind of a broad direction to OCM. I'm happy to talk about if that direction is enough or not enough in the bill. I think certainly that's something we would like. At the end of the day, this is not a Representative Reimer bill or Representative Smith bill. Really, this is for the people of Minnesota, including veterans, to be able to have access to something that can help them in one of the biggest areas of concern we have in our society. And that's why I'm passionate about this. That's why I'm thankful for partnerships across the aisle and wherever we can find it, so people can get the help that they need to live the lives they want to lead, and especially those who have given such a service to our country. So thank you, chairs.
Thank you. House file 4577 as amended is laid over. Thank you, gentlemen. This is the last meeting of the House Veterans and Military Affairs Divisions. I'd like to give each member the opportunity to make some remarks if they would like. And I'll then turn it over to Co-Chair Zhang to make remarks, and then I will close out the meeting. So we'll start down here with Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Bliss and members. Being a member of the Veterans Committee has once again been an education for me. My gratitude for our serving veteran men and women around Minnesota and around the country continues to grow, as does a sense of gratitude for each one who wore the uniform. I want to thank you for that education. I want to thank you for the opportunity and the opportunity to serve in this way. Thank you, Chair Bliss.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Bliss. Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you to all the members. This is my first term and my first committee, being a refugee kid whose origin is rooted in a conflict, I identify greatly with veterans, with a military apparatus, and just the United States, the country that accepted, you know, my family and has given me, you know, so much opportunity. So it is a chaotic world, but I have so much appreciation and love and pride and just gratefulness to all of our service members, those who have served and those who are serving, and those who are interested in serving, you know, in the future, to continue to defend and protect our country and our Constitution. So, this has been really educational. I appreciate, you know, everything that we've been talking about. And so, again, just thank you so much for the opportunity to be on this committee.
Thank you. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been an honor to serve on this committee. When we run for office, we come in with sort of the things that we plan to do, and then issues and communities find us. And my very first session, I just happened to come in early during COVID to the state office building, and so did Rob Eklund, who I served with in my first term, and he was like, the Veterans Restorative Justice Act has lawyer issues, and I don't know what to do. Like, can you please help? And I was like, sure, I'll deal with the lawyer issues. And in working on that bill, I had the opportunity to work with veterans advocates to learn so much about veterans' struggles and their lives, and those connections have stayed with me in the years that I've served, and it's just been really great in my final term to be able to serve on this committee. So thank you so much, Chair Bliss, Chair Zhang, and committee.
Thank you. Representative Clardy.
Thank you, chairs. Thank you for setting the tone for the committee. This was a committee that I chose to be on. I chose to be on it because my father was a veteran, my uncles were veterans, my siblings were veterans, and it just means a lot to me. I mean, I also am, my background, I deal a lot with mental health, and I am here and trying to absorb a lot. I've learned a lot, but I also want to contribute a lot. So I really appreciate the opportunity for being on here. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ray Brower.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank all of the committee members, and I really want to thank both our co-chairs, Zhang and Bliss, for running a great committee and working in a bipartisan effort to honor our veterans. It's been an incredible honor to be a co-vice chair. Just really appreciate that opportunity. And I also have to thank my predecessor, former chair, Mr. Jerry Newton, for you know, mentoring me and encouraging me. And he just such an incredible person with a long, long history of service, including a veteran himself and being a sergeant major. And so thank you. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both, Chair Zhang, Chair Bliss, for your level-headed and common-sense bipartisan leadership. It's a pleasure to serve on this committee always, and to the whole team. It's been great, and this is a committee where you can go and you just can kind of, okay, we can work together here and not have the stress that we have in many of the others. So thank you, and it's an honor to be able to serve our veterans and military, and appreciate that. Good job.
Representative Rapinski.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Young and fellow colleagues, it's really been an honor to serve on this committee, as many of you have stated. And I think we all deeply value the service and sacrifices that our veterans have made. And I truly believe we have a profound responsibility to act on that and ensure they receive the support that they deserve. And being on this committee gave us the opportunity to do that and to give back, and the gratitude to maybe turn it into action. I appreciate working alongside all of you. I look forward to working with you guys in the future on a number of these issues and being an advocate for our veterans. So thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the members of the committee. From my knowledge, I don't think I'll be getting on an airplane and flying over to the desert next summer like I did the summer before, so I'll be around if we need to have any conversations about veterans' issues. You know, when Representative Rehrauer mentioned Command Sergeant Major Newton, Command Sergeant Major Newton and Major Olson used to fight about who cared about soldiers more, because the Command Sergeant Majors always like to think that it's their job, but I'm a firm believer that it's the officer's job to take care of their soldier. But I've kind of come to a realization that it is this committee's job to take care of soldiers. So I appreciate that everyone at this committee has it at heart to take care of their soldiers, to take care of the veterans here in the state of Minnesota. So thank you so very much for your dedication to the service members of this state.
Imagine that an officer thinks they're more important than the enlisted. Co-Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just also want to thank our veterans for helping us shape the work that we're doing here, the important work that we're doing here in this committee to ensure that our veterans and families get access to the resources they need, and also to the stakeholder community leaders and our Department of Veteran Affairs team and Military Affairs for collaborating with Chair Bliss, myself, and our committee, this biennium, and to our amazing staff, both nonpartisan and partisan, Helen Roberts, Mr. Gibo, John Holquist, Matt, and our amazing CLAs, and our pages and Sergeant-at-Arms for making sure that our community goes smooth. And also want to thank Governor Walz and his administration. And last but not least, to our late friend, Melissa Hortman, for entrusting me in this role for, as I shared earlier on committee this year, when she had called me and asked me to gavel on this committee, I hesitated a little bit, but I hope that I did her proud. And so thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, for
working with me, and it's been an amazing 2 years.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everybody. I've been on part of this committee since the day I stepped into the legislature. This is my favorite committee. It's an honor to be the co-chair of it. And it's nice to get to know you guys in a nonpartisan way as human beings and fellow legislators. It's one of the things I enjoy about this committee. And to our predecessor that was mentioned, Mr. Newton, big shoes to fill on Mr. Newton. He was a great, great man, and I enjoyed serving next to him in this committee. I also want to thank our staff, both partisan and nonpartisan, to make us, and especially me, look not quite so naive and look like I actually know what I'm doing sometimes. So you guys had a yeoman's effort this year, and I appreciate it. And with that, that's about my final closings. But I do want to mention one more thing. Veterans Day on the Hill, great event. It's April 23rd. The event starts at the Armory at 9 a.m., and then they walk up here in mass, and it's a great, great scene, and to hear them in the rotunda is amazing. To see that many veterans and heroes in one room makes me feel very small. So, and to make me feel small is a big thing. I appreciate their service, and I hope you guys can take the time to come to that again. It's April 23rd. I believe they're in here at noon into the rotunda. What time? 1:30. Thank you for the clarification. So it'd be really great to see you all there. Thank you very much. And with that, let's see. There being no further business before the division today, this meeting is adjourned.